Today is March 14th. We are learning Sefer Bereishis. And today we are continuing with Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach. It's last time we did Yaakov in Parshas Vayetzeh. Now let's take a look at what Yaakov is doing in Parshas Vayishlach. Notice that on his way home, he is aware of the fact that he is going to have to contend with Esau. The last time he saw Esau, his mother said, "He wants to kill you, and I'll send for you right after he doesn't want to kill you anymore." Right? She called that time period Yomim Achadim. Yomim can mean years maybe there, but it's been 22 years. Yashavta imo yomim achadim ad asher tashuv chamat achicha. Stay with my brother for a few days, maybe a few years, yomim can also mean years, until your brother's anger calms down. Atshuv achicha mimcha, when his anger calms down, v'sholachticha ulakachticha misha. I will send for you, and I'll take you for it. Yaakov never hears. Okay. Now remember also that she said, you know, your brother said that as soon as your father dies, he's going to kill you. I still remember in third grade, I went to the school right up the block, Yeshiva Soloveitchik. I remember my third grade teacher saying how sinful that was. To how dare you say, when my father dies, I'll kill my brother. The fact, though, is that that's a sentiment that makes Esau more righteous than Yosef's brothers, right? You all agree? Surely Yosef cried out from that pit and said, "What are you going to tell Daddy if you don't take me here, if I don't come home?" Okay. This is the beauty of David Sykes' work. Because when Yaakov works 7 years for Rachel, what does the Torah say? Anybody know the Lashon? That's a long time to work for someone you love, no? And you know, I didn't say this is a book, but remember what he said to his future father when he goes, "I worked 7 years for you. Will you give me my wife so that I can have intercourse with her already?" Rashi writes, the most coarse of the coarse don't talk this way. Right? Why does Yaakov say that? But deep down at its core, what does it show? I think it's such an amazing puzzle. What does it show? You've been engaged to this girl for 7 years. Yeah?
And you didn't have a relationship with her during that time. Otherwise, you
wouldn't focus. Okay, in other words, they kept their chastity during that time. That's not a simple thing to do when you're, you know, he's not a youngster. Right? So, you always have to look at Rashi doesn't mention this. Rashi says he spoke that way because he was so excited finally to start putting tribes into the system. Right? But when the Torah describes what it was like to work 7 years for someone you love, remember what's the Lashon, anybody? Can you paraphrase? Vayihiyu be'enav, those 7 years were in his eyes,
7 days,
ki yomim achadim. Uses the same exact words. In other words, it was time, she should have called him already. You got married, come home and have your children at home with us. Yaakov assumes if mommy is not calling for me, I don't know what kind of postcards they could send back then, but mommy's not calling for me. It must mean that he's still angry. Right? This guy knows how to hold on to a grudge.
So the purpose is to show that, like, Ruth had told him he should go away for Yamim Achadim, and he felt it.
So, right, so I, there's a Kiskuni, it's such a beautiful Kiskuni. He says that, wait a second, when you're working for someone you love, 7 days is going to feel like 7 years. Why does it say that the 7 years went quickly because he loved her? And he says, So, you thought of so, he meant Rachel? No. Oso is the avoda. It says the avod, the feminine word meaning avoda. Yaakov finally got a job for the first time in his life, and he enjoyed it. Later on, we find out that there was no picnic to work for Lavan. But Yaakov had been sitting in tents his whole life, and he says, you know what? You give a pecha. It's nice to earn a living. So when you're looking forward to something at the end of the line, and you love what you're doing while you're doing that, that flies. Right? Okay.
Yes. So we're saying that we do take this literally. We do take the 7 years as literal.
Yeah. For 7 years. Right? So I remember giving this in the sermon once about, this is going on for a long time, but, you know, people go from job to job. They run. They go here. They work for two months. It's not working. They go. And they go from girlfriend to girlfriend. They did this one. No, it's not working. In 2 days, it's finished. I'm not good. It's not going to work. And people doing this in marriage also. First year, it's not. No, it's terrible. I'm going to get out of this. Try it a little harder to make things work. And don't rush into something unless you have a good sense that it could work. You keep making the wrong relationships and keep taking the wrong jobs, of course it's not going to work. So I used Yaakov as a paradigm. Sorry, I wouldn't have said 15 today. Oh my goodness, you have 2 hours on me. Would you like some strong English breakfast tea? We have people who are willing to help. Okay. All right. So Yaakov is not being killed by his mother. Right? Yosef is born, and he it's time to go. Why when Yosef is born? Because now that Rachel had a child, I'm complete. I have 4 wives. Each one has given me a child. It's time to get out of here. I've had it with my father-in-law. It's time to go. Rashi mentions drash, why Yosef makes it more safe for him to leave, but it's drash. Okay. Yaakov does not try to sneak home. He tries to sneak away from Aram. That's true. Remember that? Where Balaam says, you know, why did you run away before I had a chance to whisper to say goodbye to my daughters? Right? Okay. Hashem tells Balaam, I know you wanted to harm him. I didn't let you. Okay. So Yaakov tries to sneak away from Balaam, but he's not trying to sneak away to get home. The parasha begins by Yishlach Yaakov Malachim. Right? Yaakov's hoping for the best. Mommy has not sent for me yet. What does that mean? Okay, so now I would like to read the first few psukim of Parshas Vayishlach together with you and see, to answer this question after I take out this question, what did Yaakov surmise in the first few psukim that made him think that he has to prepare the way he did? That he's going to kill Aim Alvanim. What mischief is going on here? Right? Because we see in the end, Esav didn't do any of those things. But he's really prepared for a real show-off here. That he's going to kill Aim, he's going to kill women and children. Yes?
So we know Lavan was an evil person, but why do you want to harm the father, his grandchildren, and the husband of his daughter? I would say that
I never really felt I had a good answer to that question. until I saw Aramean law involving what Laban thought was his. Aramean law, unlike Torah law, has inheritance going to daughters, not to sons. Right? It's more enlightened in terms of, you know, but the reason for this is perhaps because, you know, a woman, I can see how she gives birth. I can see who her child is. I can't tell who a man's child is. When there's a lot of promiscuity, you want things to go through the women that you know gave birth. Right? Did you get this? Did you just get this? Right? Okay, one time, Reb Chaim was sitting with his son, the Beis HaLevi was sitting with his son, Reb Chaim, like a Soviet's grandfather, and he said, "Can you get me a drink of water?" Just at the same time that his mother asked for a drink of water. So he got the father first, and he said, Why did you get for me before your mother?" He goes, "Daddy, it's a Gemara. You have to do for your mother first before your father." He goes, "Well, why?" He said, "The Gemara explains, because I have to honor you and mommy, but mommy has to honor you, so I'm honoring you." So he said to his father, his kid was five according to the story, he said, "Well, maybe you should always honor your mother first, because your mother is your mother through edus. Someone saw your mother give birth to me, to you. But I'm only your father, al tchazoka, lo bios, achari haba." Right? Maybe we should always honor our mother first, because edus is much higher than chazoka. Chazoka is only an assumption. Edus is proof. You got that? So the little boy answered, "How would I be honoring mommy by giving her the water first on the presumption that maybe you're not my father?" Okay, so in Aram, because they're very promiscuous, so everything goes through the daughters. Lavan does have some sons, it seems, but the daughters are doing daughters going out with the shepherd, maybe, right? So, Lavan thinks that the grandchildren are his. Right? That's why, they make a deal. If you cross over into your land, you go with your laws. If whatever happens here in Aram is my laws. So that's why when Rachel died, Reuven, Lavan's firstborn grandchild from Yaakov, thinks that whatever belongs to Rachel belongs to me, my father's daughter. In other words, Reuven, by taking Bilhah or doing anything with Bilhah, is showing that he seems to prefer Lavan's law over his father's. And that's Yaakov gets even with that on his deathbed. That's why at the end of at the end of Yaakov's life says, "Ephraim and Menashe Lihaim, Rachel's grandchildren are mine, they're not Lavan's." Right? Okay, so alright, I'm giving a lot of matter here. I think that Lavan feels that whatever Yaakov has accomplished has come at my expense, and I even, according to Aramean law, have the right to some of what Yaakov accomplished. And that's why he's chasing after you. Okay, but yeah, so that's why maybe why Yaakov, knowing this, tried to flee unannounced. But the point of the contrast I'm making is that Yaakov does not try to make his way home unbeknownst to Esau. He sends Esau home. Again, I ask you, and I answered Mr. Clark's question. Again, I ask you, what is it that makes Yaakov think the worst is about to happen? So let's read. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv artzah seir sedei Edom. You guys from Aram, you don't have to cross Seir to get home. Whether it's Beersheba or whether it's Hebron, wherever Yaakov has to go, he doesn't have to. That happens to have had a map of Israel in the last place. But Seir is down here. Yaakov just has to come. Here's Aram, you see. Yaakov just has to come down there. Go like that. It looks like a map of the trip in Mitzrayim. From Mitzrayim to Israel, all the circuitous routes. Right? Why is he sending a message to Esav? So this is an important thing. If you ever see the Hakdama of Ramban to Parshas Vayishlach, he quotes a Maimar Chazal that says that whenever Rebbe had to go to Rome to beseech on behalf of a Jewish interest, he would read Parshas Vayishlach first. Have you heard that? Always read Parshas Vayishlach in preparation for any go on an APAC mission, read Parshas Vayishlach first. Right? Going on a lobbying trip, read Parshas Vayishlach first. Right? That's what Ramban writes. I could not find this Maimar Chazal though. It's in my Bereishis book, but I could not show. I looked everywhere. I looked, went online. It's apparently some kind of makor, because you always like to cite your original makor. Right? If you see in my book, I'm always writing something like, this is Rashi, Deuteronomy 32:12, from Sifrei,
Which Antonine emperor was this kind of Rebbe? Was it Marcus Aurelius?
To me, this is probably Marcus Aurelius.
But there are three Antonine emperors.
I'm just saying that they usually say Marcus Aurelius. I think that's the one. Isn't there a movie Maximus or something?
No, that's different. He is there. Yeah, he is
one of the other.
The Marcus Aurelius is also like the most famous.
There's definitely historical, because Rebbe has a very good relationship with one of the Roman emperors whose advice he sought. Okay, so he sends a message. I don't want to look like I'm gambling my way home, right? Through stealth. Vayetzavo some lemor kotor mula dolila esav ko amar abdechoy Yaakovi v'lham garti v'yachar amatzav. I've been living with good love on all this time, and I've been tarrying until now. Some of the extraneous lashon is what makes Rashi. It's also another anomaly where Rashi says, "Im lovan garti v'tariyak mitzvah shamarti." Have you heard that, Rashi?
Yeah.
We don't know the source of that Rashi. You think something like that should have a source, right? Rashi would ever make up something like that. It's not Rashi's derech to make up something like that. When Rashi makes up something, he also says, ulefita ati, or he says, va'ani omer, or yidi omer li. 99% of Rashi al HaTorah is a reconstituted medrash, gemara, or targum. How do I know? Because I can look it up. There are books that do that for you. Right? In Lovan Garti, v'echar ad ato. I lived with Lovan, and I've been tarrying there since then. Just say Lovan Garti Arata or Lovan Echarti Arata. So the Garti with Tari of Mitzvahs. Be medaktik. I don't need to spend much time on this. It doesn't say Tari of Mitzvahs Kiyamti. You can't know in Kiyam 613 Mitzvahs.
It also wasn't because at that moment it'll be narrated.
What's going on? He says Tari of Mitzvahs Shamarti. You could be a shomer of Mitzvahs, right? No one keeps all the mitzvahs. No one wants to keep all the mitzvahs. I don't want to make my wife a soda, and I don't want to give her a divorce, and I don't want to give her a chalitza. I don't want my brother giving her a chalitza. Certainly not. Okay. I don't want to break the neck of a donkey that I don't give to a kohen. There's lots of things I don't want to do. Right? Okay, anyway. So he's saying, but notice the contrition. Avdecha, who's bowing to whom here? Okay, now prepare for this. The way we're about to read the next 10 or 12 psukim. Right? Should I allow you to figure out there's going to be a template for what we're doing with it? Yaakov is. You think Rashi mentions this often, and you think it's drash, but I really do think it's pshat. Is that Yaakov is trying to, in words and in actions, undo the bracha that God that Yitzchak gave him, where Esav thought should have gone to him. You know what I'm saying again? Okay. The reason why you had to run away from home is that for 22 years, I have been haunted by this bracha. And you know what? It hasn't gotten me anywhere. Because the only thing I have is lots of children and what's the only thing he has? The gift he gives.
Animals.
I've got lots of animals. That I'll admit. I got this great thing I did with the wood. I got a lot of animals. Okay? You don't even know what that is, but...
Wasn't that, wealth back then?
Okay, fine. But I don't have the things that I got from your bracha, which is... Tal HaShemayim, Shmanei HaAretz, Rov Dagon V'Sirosh, short bracha. Okay? And with respect to you, Hevei Yavir L'Achecha. Yishtachavu L'cha B'Ne'imecha. Who's down to whom here, by the way, right? I have so many Sfarim on Rashi. I have a whole library, just Sfarim written on Rashi. Really, 100. And one of the Sfarim I have is called Be'er Stumos Rashi, which is, I just have it because I have it, but it's the most amazing. It darshens Rashi the way you're supposed to darshen the biblical text. Right? The pshat of Im Lovan Garti is, Im Lovan Garti is that he's concentrating on this word. I've only been a ger all this time. I don't have any land to myself. Right? So Rashi writes on these words that he writes about the Taryag. He says, Daddy said, Hevei Gevir La'achecha, Velonis Kaimabi. Daddy said that I should be the gvir, which is the master of my brother, you. It's not happened. You have no reason to be angry with me. Right? I must say I'm against the mahalach of what Rashi's doing. Because there's no indication, no indication that Yaakov thinks yet that Esav is going to kill me in Mashal. But, okay, but the contrition is there. The contrition by saying you're a servant, right? You're my master. There's some contrition. But you see, I don't know if you're going to catch this. You see the word gvir? The lowness kaim of b. Take the word b out of gvir and what are you left with?
Ger.
I'm just a ger. A ger means that the bracha I took from you has not come true.
Who's this Velonis Kaimabi?
Rashi. It's Rashi's book. You see, Esav lives for the moment. In the moment, Esav, you're the one who's ruling over me. Who's bowing to whom here?
How does Esav know what it was?
He's telling you that now. Maybe he doesn't. It's also possible that Yitzchak told Esav what I'm going to give you. I just want to officially give it to you after you give me something. That's the nature of the bracha. You give the kohen his truma. And he's going to bless the work. It's reciprocal. Okay? This is Drash. But Yaakov is trying to show, Rashi says, that none of this has come true. If anything, all I have is animals. In this, I have, you know, Dvar Torah number 9 in my book on Bereishis. There's always some kind of a really old, it's usually original, really wild gematria. Some kind of something that you get really is, oh, I can't believe it. Right? So there are two psukim in the entire Torah where every word in the pasuk ends with the letter Mem Sofit. One is where Yaakov lines up about 12 words in a row. Gmalim, Masayim, Tioshim, Esrim, Amorim, Masayim. But 12 words in the Pasuk. Every one of the words ends with the letter Mem. Right? There's only one other Pasuk like that. It's in Parshas Pinchas that speaks about the Musafin of Sukkos. And throughout, all the words in 8 psukim in a row, 7 psukim in a row, end with the letter Mem, but it says Kamishpat. But on one of the days it says Kamishpatam. So in that pasuk, every one of the letters in that pasuk also ends with the letter Mem. Now here's the amazing coincidence. If you add up all of the karbanos of all the musafim on Sukkos, 550. If you add up all the animals that Yaakov gave to Esau in Tarshish Vishlach, it's also 550. Right? That's amazing. Okay, Lemaisa, you see what Yaakov is doing. He's trying to fix the mistake of taking the bracha. Do you remember, if you ever asked, say it like this, what should Yaakov have done? We've established he wants this. He purchased it. He's just afraid of getting caught. This is what I would like to say Yaakov should have done. Mom, if you're so sure I'm supposed to get this bracha because God told you when you were pregnant for Rabbi Avot Sa'ir, still glad what I just said? If you're so sure that I should have gotten this bracha because of what God told you when you were pregnant, so I'm going to get this bracha. Come with me. If I'm not supposed to get the bracha as you understand it, I certainly don't want to take it for subterfuge. You okay with that? If you want to ask hashkafically, what would have happened if Yaakov refused to take the bracha? Maybe Esav would have died hunting that day. Is this true? Yes. Yeah.
I wasn't going to be able to get this bracha. I didn't exist.
Which is what bracha?
The
Bechor. Yeah. The Bechor does exist.
No, Talmud, he purchases it, it doesn't. The bracha wasn't a...
Not bracha, no one keeps bracha before. If you are a firstborn, you can tell your younger brother, give me your coin collection, and when daddy gives me my double portion, we'll give it to you.
But didn't
the bracha is something that exists as soon as you're born.
Didn't the bracha that you were supposed to do Asa connected to the fact that he was a Bechor?
I think it connected to the Yitzchak knows that he wasn't davening Bechor. I think it connects to the fact that Esav deserves the Torah Shemayim and Shemana Yaretz. He puts food on the table. He's a good son. He honors me, and I don't want to turn him away. Now that's one approach. That's my approach. But he didn't told us. And another approach. He says another derech. I give you another derech in Dvar Torah number 4. Okay. The Bechorah is something that can be sold. Yes.
Was there ever an option for Yaakov to tell Yitzchak that he bought the brachot from Esav and that he should... I mean, like, I know we spoke about maybe he would have told Yitzchak, would Yaakov ever just kind of like, I bought these, you can ask Esav, go about that?
I'm not sure why you get maybe
to avoid subterfuge.
Why wouldn't Yaakov tell him? Yeah. And if he did Yitzchak say, okay, I'm going to give you the Bechor. You're getting Israel. You're getting Avraham's bracha. You're getting it's Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? Just that you're going to serve Esav. Well, that's the way I see history. Nothing antithetical to you bowing to Esav while having the bracha of Abraham. Right? Rivka thinks that that's naive. Either, again, my total tartar is that Rivka felt she had to resort to tricking her husband. And by Yetzer, no, she told him the day she heard the oracle for Rabbi Avot Sa'ir. They just had to work out a way to get the bracha away from Esav without turning him away from his parents. Or, alternatively, this is the beauty of Torah, it depends on how you view it. Esav, Rivka told Yitzchak about what God told her when she was pregnant. He just felt, for Rabbi Avot Sa'ir, I want to split that. They give Olam Hazeh, they give both of them the Sirosh. Nothing in this bracha mentions anything spiritual. Yaakov gets a bracha when he leaves home. Beitim b'chosker, because Avram b'chol zarechoy toch, we wish to choser, it's megurechosh, and a son of a kim l'Avram. He mentions Avram twice. He mentions the land he's to inherit. This just mentions all gashmias, which is what Esav wants. Maybe Yaakov would have been happy just with Birkas Avraham. It's Rivka who says, I want my Yaakov to have both. And the way Rabban views Sefer Bereishis, another line has the same opinion. The reason why Jews do very well, given equal opportunity, right, is that we have the bracha of Rivka. Tala Shemayim, Shemayim Aretz. But be careful. We were lulled into an anomalous situation after the Holocaust for 70 years. The real state of the world about the Jew is starting to come out in media and at college campuses all over the world. Forget about what's going on in Europe. I look in America, think about what's going on in Europe and in other places. Australia, it's like the last 70 years was anomalous. We're just coming back to business as usual for the last 2,000 years. All right, I hope not. But you have to be careful. If the world is divided between those who contribute to the world, and we'll see that Israel has far and away the highest by far. Number two is way behind patents per capita of population. Well, Israel is way ahead on so many things that make the life in the world easier and better, while being surrounded by everyone who wants to destroy it. But be careful. The world is divided not between those who help and those who are helped, but between those who are aggrieved and those who are oppressed, and on the other side, those who are oppressors. Of course we're oppressors. Look how well we do. We run afoul of people who divide the world that way. Okay. Let's read. What makes Yaakov think that his brother is out to get him? Yaakov sends the message. He says, he tells him, this is the only thing I have. I'm wealthy. Make the point again, everybody. My wealth does not comprise anything in the bracha I got from you. Vayashuvu ha-malochim el Yaakov lemor. The malochim, now, guys, you read Parshas Vayishlach every year, and did you ever think to ask a question on this pasuk? The messengers came back, and they said, "Bonu Elochicha el Esav, the Gamolech likroscha ba'arba'meos ishima." Are you curious about anything else that this passage is not telling us? We got up to your brother to Esav, and he's coming out to meet you with 400 men. Come on, there's something so profoundly missing here. Why so many men, and
what are they doing?
Why? And what else? Did he Did he say anything? Did he say, oh, how nice, my brother's coming. I haven't seen him in a long time. Any messages from him? What does this mean that Esav is coming with 400 men? How did they know it was 400 men? Did they count them?
This would be like an affirmation.
What?
It would be like an instant affirmation, you could tell.
Or that Esav said, that's all he said. In other words, how much time did they spend there? They spent time to count the men? Esav said, oh, I'm coming with 400 men to give. In other words, we got that information from him. How did they know 400 men? I don't know, but they should have said a lot of men, or about 400. Esav has 400 men with him. Look how Rashi works in this Perush in Tanakh. At the end of the parasha, it says, at the end of the story, it says, Yaakov went home to his father, and Esav returned to Har Seir. If it says Esav returned to Har Seir, what's missing? What about the 400 men? He was meeting them with 400 men. What happened to them? So Rashi cites, this is in Gracious Rabbah, that the 400 men decided, you know, this Esav, he's not a good guy. We're out of here. We're leaving him.
That was post everything that went down?
Yeah, what is... Because there's a story in Shmuel Bet when David fights a war against Esav's descendants, and it says 400 men escaped. To Rashi, that is that's always going to get in his parish.
What does that have to do with it, though?
Because it's a coincidence, of course. It's 1,000 years later. It's 670 years later. To Rashi, why does the Torah tell me how many men escaped in the Shmuel Bet? It's to connect here, because these 400 men departed from Esav, that's the reward later. Rashi loves that kind of stuff. Right? Mida connected, Mida, that gets into Rashi's parish a lot. But the problem in the beginning is that Esav does not declare an intention of why I'm coming out to meet him with 400 men. As it turns out, I'm from the Rashbam school, that I'm from the Bechor Shor school. That Esav's intention with these 400 men, finish my sentence if you'd like, is to honor him. I miss you. I'd like to show you I love you.
Really?
That's Rashbam. Bechor Shor. But there's some mischief in me. Bechor Shor says, I'm not going to kill you, but I want to show you the way. And that I want you to be afraid of me. And he's delighted to see how afraid he is. Rashi is of a very different school here. Remember Rashi, Esav, son of Yaakov? Rashi thinks Esav wanted to kill him, only Hashem didn't let him. Not sure why Rashi didn't see this in a more enlightened way, like his grandson Rashbam. But okay, maybe he saw the Christian. Is that, I don't know. Okay. Sforno says something. I think maybe somewhere in the middle, he says, remember what happened to Yaakov just before he runs out to meet Esav? Fighting with the angels. Yaakov is probably, you know, he has a dislocated hip. He's probably barely 7 times. He goes, Esav, who probably wants a good fight, he goes, I'm not going to fight with him. What the paper's going to say tomorrow? Esav kills a living brother and wipes out a bunch of children. Ugh, there's no fight in this. Yaakov had come with... Yaakov has Shimon and Levi, but that hasn't happened yet. Alright, so anyway, Esav doesn't see a good fight here, so that's one. That's amazing. That's really crazy.
I think 400 men is also kind of unfair, though. That's why It's like 400 men is unfair, but now that he's only taking.
But why?
Well, he doesn't know how many people are in Yaakov's camp. I have 400. Maybe he's got two, some people hiding out in the back too.
Maybe he holds some of his men back. I don't know.
Why be elusive about what there's no message. It just says there are 400 men coming to greet you. And what?
For what purpose? So Yaakov has to be careful. He has to prepare for the worst
without possibly insulting his brother just in case, you know, he doesn't intend to go. It's really the Yerushalmi called the Sefer Demai.
And it's such beautiful sugyas about how to, if you're invited to someone's house, how to cover your ground in case they didn't tithe without revealing to them that you think they didn't tithe.
No, there's never a question of kashrus. The kashrus is unassailable. And some of it is even on Shabbos. We are not allowed to tithe.
What are you doing eating in their house on Shabbos? No. I'm not worried about Bishol Akum. I'm not worried about Bishol on Shabbos. I'm not worried about Kashrus. But maybe, just maybe, they didn't tithe properly. So how can I fix that?
Well, don't go to such a house. No, but I have to be here because it's my boss, and I have to, it's my cousin, it's an offer, and I don't want to insult them. You know. So, Yaakov has the same kind of dance to make here, right? I have to cover my bases in case he does want to kill Amal Bunim, right? And how can I do that without possibly insulting him, right?
Question.
Yes.
I may have missed this, but why
does
Yaakov decide to go home versus settle anywhere else and take the risk of Esau harming him?
Because Hashem told him to. Okay. You know, Yaakov might have thought that when my grandfather was told that his descendants would be strangers in a strange land, that I just fulfilled that. I'm not sure. Okay, Vayiro Yaakov Me'od, Vayetzer Lo. Are you familiar with Goldmeyer once quoted this Rashi on this pasuk from the UN? Anybody remember what that is? Vayiro Yaakov Me'od, Vayetzer Lo. Yaakov was afraid and disturbed. No one remembers it? Come on, it's just such a very common thought, a common Rashi. Why say twice that he was so disturbed? Why mention two different things? What was he afraid of? One of Goldmeyer's most famous quotes. Yes.
He was afraid that he were going to die, and he thought that he might have to kill his.
Right. So what did Goldmeyer say? I can forgive the Arabs for killing my boys, but I can't forgive them for making my boys kill. They're taught by their leaders that they hate us, they want our land. But look, because of them, we have to have our boys in the army. Okay, so yet, when you wrote Yaakov, Shema Yehoreig, Vayetzelo Shema Yaharog. He's after all my brother. Does it ring a bell?
May you tear me scared?
He's distressed.
Here too, you familiar with Bechor Shor? Yosef Bechor Shor of Orleans. He was one of the great Balei HaTosfos, and he has a very good shot Perush to the Torah.
He's sort of halfway between Rashi and Rishpam, which is a good place to be in northern French Parshanut. Rashi already took care of the drushes. The foreshore says something very interesting. He agrees that it's worthy to try to explain what each one of these lines means separately. Rashbam did not think so. Rashbam thought that this is just Hebrew Torah, Lashon Ha'adam. The Torah speaks in parallelistic phrases. Right? What it was that he was afraid of in two different ways, B'chor Shor disagrees with Rashi. He says, I'm worried that he'll kill me. What distressed him? Look at the ingenuity here. Mommy told me that he would never come to kill me unless... Daddy's dead. He's coming out with me 400 men? I'm thinking the worst. Not only is he going to come kill me, but this may mean that Daddy's dead. Otherwise, he wouldn't come out with me with 400 men with murderous intent. You get it now? Okay. And he says, listen to what he says here. Remember when Rivka told Yaakov, you better run away. Loma eshkal gam shneichem yom echad. You better run away, Yaakov. Your brother wants to kill you. Why should I be bereft of both of you on the same day? Now, who are the both of you on the same day that Rivka's going to lose? You looked ahead. The pshat, it's Yaakov and Esau. Why should I lose both of my sons on the same day? Ron Sota says that Esav and Yaakov died on the same day as a prophecy, what she said. But no, the Choshor says it refers to to Yitzchak and Yaakov. He said, as soon as my husband dies, as soon as his father dies, he's going to kill you. Why should I lose my husband and my son on the same day? You get it? Why should she lose Esav just because Esav killed Yaakov? Because the blood avenger will kill Esav? I don't know. I don't like this parish as appealing as it is, because that word eshkal is a very specific word in the Bible. Anyone tell me? If it was a more general word, like why should I lose, lama evad gam shneichem, why should I lose the two of you? Then I could say one is her son, one is her husband. But shin chof lamed, a rare word, it's only used about 10 times in the whole Bible, right, is only used for losing
children.
Only for losing children. Kasher shachofi, shachofi, Yaakov says, when he's afraid of losing Shimon, Binyamin, and Yosef, right? I don't know. I don't know that shot. I'm not sure. Okay. So Yaakov is worried. This may mean that Daddy's dead. Right? So he comes up with a plan, a strategy. Okay, I'll close today's class with a real question on the strategy. He divides his camp up in a way. Now again, I don't mean that Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach has to follow the morality of the way that the Mishnah and the Talmud present what I'm about to tell you. But it is so antithetical to what we know is normative halacha by setting up Bilhah and Zilpah in the front, Leah in the middle, and Yosef and Rachel in the back. You with me? It's obvious what he's doing. He says if he kills the people in the front, let the people in the back survive and escape. You can't do stuff like that. The Gemara actually addresses cases like this and says you're not allowed to. Now again, you see, I am imposing upon Yaakov the restrictions of Maseches Horios and Maseches Trumas and Mishalmi Trumas, and is it okay to do that? Chazal do that kind of stuff all the time, but this is not a minor Chazal. I'm saying. So what gives Yaakov the right to behave this way? So let me tell you, I'll close today's class with what I think is a beautiful word from it. It's a pasuk in Koheles. There's a pasuk in Koheles that says, "V'ha'elokim mevakesh es nirdof." God presses the case of the most vulnerable people. Really? God loves the orphan and the widow? Why did he take their father and their husband? I can't answer that question. I'm just a little amoeba. But I know that God loves the widow by convincing the people that they should take care of the widow. Right? That's upon us, not God. God presses the case of the most vulnerable. Of Yaakov's three sections, Leah's children, Bilhah and Zilpah's children, Rachel's children, who's the most vulnerable?
Rachel.
Bilhah and Zilpah. They're the Shvachos. Rachel and Yosef are the most protected. They're in Yaakov's inner circle. Bilhah and Zilpah, their four children are the most vulnerable. Ah, so they're the ones most likely to get God's protection. I'll put them in the front. God will surely take care of that. They're vulnerable. Getting this? It's a drash. Okay. But what it means is that how does God take care of the most vulnerable is by convincing us that it's in our best interests to do so. Okay? Clear? Alright, we still have a little more to do in Parashat Vayishlach. What we're going to do on Tuesday is to show how Yaakov comes full circle by the time he actually meets Esau. I'm going to skip, there's a lot in between. When he finally meets Esau, because in between he's going to be fighting with an angel, he's going to, right? Yaakov has to put a lot of the past behind him. And God's going to help him, first and foremost, by giving him a new name. Right? Okay. See you, Mitzvah Shem, on Tuesday.